Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My mama told me when I was hatched, act like a superstar. Save your allowance, buy a bubble dress, and someday you will go far.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's a new book out in stores. It's called Weird Al, The Book. Contrary to what you might think, it's not a new installment in the popular Hunger Games series for young adults. It's actually a book about the music parodist Weird Al Yankovic. It chronicles his 30-year career spent sending up pop hits by Michael Jackson, Nirvana, and on this song called Perform This Way, Lady Gaga. After exhaustive research, we have identified the perfect person to talk to us about Weird Al, the book. Ladies and gentlemen, Weird Al Yankovic. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John.
So, this is not the first time we have gotten your life story. There was the Authorized Al back in the 80s, which turned out to be, like, complete farce. So why should we believe you this time?
Well, when I read The Authorized Al and found out there was so much misinformation in it, I figured I had to set the record straight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, back then, that was 1985 when that came out. And in fact, that book is a collector's item. I saw that on Pawn Stars. Somebody paid a lot of good money for that book. And back then, 1985, I was pretty much just starting out. And the fact that I was even doing an autobiography at that point was laughable. And
pretty
I thought,
presumptuous.
Yes, I couldn't really take it seriously having a career that was maybe 2 years old at that point. So the whole thing was done sort of as a mock biography.
Now, this one, you couldn't really call it an autobiography because you have Nathan Rabin from the AV Club actually doing most of the storytelling, although you're, you know, sort of throwing comments from the peanut gallery left
exactly.
and right here. Why decide to do it that way?
Well, you know, I liked the idea of doing a coffee table book, doing a retrospective, but doing any kind of real autobiography didn't really appeal to me for a number of reasons. I feel like I've been talking about myself for the last 30 years in various interviews and podcasts, and I haven't really been holding back. There's no juicy tidbits or gossip or anecdotes or dirt that I've been, like, saving for the autobiography. And I just felt that Nathan could give it a whole fresh slant. It would be, I think for the fans, it would be better to hear it in somebody else's words because I was just kind of sick of hearing myself talk.
Now, you talk about, you know, back in 85, your career was just a couple of years old. I remember, you know, first hearing you on Dr. Demento when I was a teenager. What I didn't realize was that you were a teenager at the same time. So you really started this very early on.
Yeah, I mean, when I started out, it wasn't professional. I didn't really think that I was going to be Weird Al for a living. But, you know, when I was in high school, I was sending recordings that I made in my bedroom with my accordion and a little cheesy cassette tape recorder. And those recordings were horrible, and the songs were not that clever. But I think Dr. Demento thought it was just a novel concept that this teenager with an accordion thought he was being cool.
Now, let's remember, 1980, this is before, way before the accordion had its little renaissance of hipness.
Oh, yes.
It was like a real outside. How did you end up with the accordion?
I think that was probably my parents' decision. They gave me accordion lessons when I was a small child. And I think they realized that I would bring this renaissance into existence, that I would be at the forefront of the North American accordion rock movement.
So you didn't expect to be Weird Al as a career. Where did the name Weird Al come from?
The name came from college radio, oddly enough. Well, full disclosure, I think they were calling me that in the dorms in college before I took it on professionally for some odd reason. But my sophomore year, I started doing a shift on the college radio station, KCPR San Luis Obispo. And everybody on the air had some sort of wacky nickname. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Weird Al seemed appropriate. I was sort of the surrogate Dr. Demento for the college because we couldn't pick up his radio show there. And I played all sorts of, you know, new wave and novelty and stuff that the mainstream stations were playing, and name seemed appropriate, and it just kind of stuck.
Now, that period of time, I know, you know, bands like Talking Heads, Devo, these were some of your favorites.
Absolutely, yeah.
The Knack had a big hit around this time with My Sharona. And this really was your entree into a kind of a wider world of musical parody.
It was. I mean, you know, I was a big fan of the Knack. My Sharona ruled the airwaves the summer of 1979. I had a kind of stupid and obvious idea in My Bologna. And I recorded that in the bathroom across the hall from the campus radio station. We called it Studio 229. For some reason, it had a number above the door, 229. And we ran lines from the production room across the hall into the bathroom because it had, of course, the nice reverb in the bathroom, the tiled walls. And that recording went to Dr. Demento, and it sort of went viral in the days before things went viral, but in the pre-YouTube days, it got bootlegged all around the world. And the Knack heard it, and Capitol Records heard it, and they decided to put it out as a single, oddly enough.
And then in 1983, was it, or 85, you did the re-recording for the debut album?
83. The first album, yeah.
And this is Weird Al's version of My Bologna.
Show me how. Spread it on a little of this bologna, hoping that we don't run out. Don't run out. If we do, I'm sure that I'll miss bologna. Never gonna stop. Eat it up. Such a tasty snack. I always eat too much and throw up, but I'll soon be back for my yeah, yeah. Woo! My bologna. My bologna.
Weird Al with My Bologna, or My Bologna, or My Bologna, depending on how you pronounce it. But bologna for this song, a parody of the Knack's My Sharona. I have to say, I was with you on the Devo and Talking Heads, favorite bands of mine. I hated this song. I hated the Knack. I loved this parody.
Oh,
it was
thanks.
Great.
You were part of the Nuke the Knack movement then,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, there's a picture in the book of a letter from Capitol Records, which sort of tells the story of you finding out why they call it a record business. Tell us that story.
Well, basically, they paid me a sum total of $500 for the master of My Bologna and the flip side, which was also recorded in the bathroom, an original song called School Cafeteria. And that was it, $500. And I thought that was great. That was, you know, I was at college. I was 19 years old. I was going to college. I'm on Capitol Records. This is great.
Right.
I think
for a song you did in the bathroom.
Yeah. My friends told me, oh, you should have a lawyer check into this. I mean, this, you know, this is a record contract. I said, you're right. I paid a lawyer $75 to say, yes, this is a record contract.
So
you can sign this.
No expense.
No, absolutely. So $500, that's what I got paid. Here's how the record company works. When I was on a different label a couple years later and I wanted to get the rights to re-record My Bologna, Capitol Records charged me $1,000.
To re-record
to
your own song.
To re-record it, yes.
Nice. So that was the beginning of your career, and you also write in the book that you quit your last day job when you noticed your name on the Billboard Hot 100.
Right. I was working in the mailroom, and part of my job was to go to the post office every morning, get the big mail sack, and bring everything back. And Billboard magazine was at the top of the mailbag, and I started thumbing through it, and there I was in the Billboard charts. And I thought, yeah, I should probably give notice right about now. I should probably get serious about this whole Weird Al thing.
So you liked the Knack, you liked My Sharona. Did you always parody songs you liked, or were there ever songs that you just hated and thought, oh, I'm going to send this up big time?
It's usually done from a place of fandom. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head where I just hated it and then decided to do a parody. And part of that is because, especially nowadays, I realize that when I do a parody, I have to be, you know, I have to live with that song for a very long time. I'm sometimes doing it on stage every night, and I wouldn't want to do a song that drove me crazy. So the answer is I generally just pick songs that are popular regardless of my personal feelings, but I think I gravitate towards songs I actually like.
Well, I mean, many, many comedians and parodists and satirists will say, you know, you do your best work when it's something you love.
Yes.
You know, people who send up opera tend to be genuine opera files.
Yes,
otherwise
of course
it doesn't work.
Right.
The interesting thing about what you just said is the phrase, you know, I'm going to be with it. This song is going to live with me a long time, because a lot of this kind of material has a sell-by date that is not too far out from the recorded date.
That's true. It's some would say it would be an albatross around my neck. But you know what? It's odd, because even though these songs are ostensibly novelty or disposable, I mean, they have a lot of nostalgic appeal. I mean, my live show is made up of a large percentage of older songs, which are, you know, a bit dated. Mm-hmm. But I mean, people have their memories connected with those songs. And when I play them live in concert, they go nuts. So they definitely still have value.
Now, did you start from the beginning asking permission of the people that you parodied?
Well, at the very, very beginning, no, because, again, you know, I was just like a teenage kid sending in tapes to Dr. Demando. So it didn't occur to me, like, I should probably call up the guys in Queen and see if they'd be okay with this. So I was just doing it for grins. And then once I found out that, like, you know, people were really paying attention, including lawyers, mm-hmm. I said, well, you know, I should probably go by the book.
Well, the book says, as a parodist, you are covered. That is considered fair use. And yeah. Yet you have, through the course of your professional career at least, you've been very diligent about asking for permission.
It's true. You know, I could get away with not asking for permission. But, you know, it historically, I've found that for me personally, it just makes the most sense to get their blessing, because, you know, I don't like drama. I don't want to have anybody pointing fingers and saying, I really wish Al hadn't done this, you know. And it just makes things easier in terms of getting permission and clearances and royalty payments and credits. And I just don't want to step on people's toes.
So Michael Jackson had to okay Eat It,
yes.
Your parody of Beat It. And subsequent Michael Jackson parodies were either okayed by him or not okayed. Was it hard getting him early on? I mean, he was an early adopter.
Yes,
absolutely,
yes. It didn't take that long from what I remember. I think we put in the request, and within a couple of weeks, we heard back from Michael. I mean, you know, through his people. But, I mean, mm-hmm. he personally signed off on it and said, yeah, funny idea, go right on ahead. And that really opened a lot of doors for us, because prior to that, it was iffy. We didn't get a lot of phone calls returned. My manager would call up people and say, hello, I represent Weird Al Yankovic, and they'd say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, but after Michael Jackson gave his blessing, that gave us ammunition. And if anybody turned us down or was waffling after that, we could say, well, you know, Michael Jackson didn't seem to have a problem. Perhaps you've heard of him, you know.
And so when it came time to do the Nirvana parody, Kurt Cobain and the boys were like, now we know we've made it.
Exactly.
Because
yes.
Weird Al Yankovic wants to parody our
right.
song. All right, here's a couple of examples of Weird Al's music. Eat It, his send-up of Michael Jackson's Beat It from 1984, and then Smells Like Nirvana, a send-up of a parody of Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit from 1992.
How come you're always such a fuzzy young man? Don't want no Captain Crunch, don't want no Raisin Bran. Well, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan? So eat it, just eat it. So eat it. Don't you tell me you're full. Just eat it. Eat it. Eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it.
What is this song all about? Can't figure any lyrics out. How do the words to it go? I wish you'd tell.
My guest on Soundcheck is Weird Al Yankovic. There are two of his parodies, Eat It from 1984, Smells Like Nirvana from 1992. It's hard for me to hear Eat It without remembering that video. And the other kind of interesting thing, especially the photos in the new book, Weird Al the Book, is what a chameleon you are. I mean, you know, you're sort of able to kind of step into these roles, not just sonically, but visually as well.
Yeah, it's I sort of assume their personalities and try to dig deep and peel back the layers and put on their skin for a while.
And also to really adopt the band sound of the original. So, probably worth giving a shout out to the boys in the band.
Absolutely. I mean, I got very, very lucky early on. I've had the same guys in my band since the early 80s. And not only are they great guys, but they are some of the best musicians in the world. And they do every genre imaginable from Zydeco to gangster rap.
Now, do we take that sort of virtuosity, that sort of artistry in the service of comedy too lightly in this culture?
I think some people do. I think, and this is something that, like Frank Zappa, a lot of people had to deal with, people that had amazing chops, but because they did, their oeuvre had a lot of comedy in it, some people just didn't perhaps give them the props that they deserved. And that's something that I've been battling for a long time, and I especially feel sorry that my band sometimes doesn't get the respect they deserve because people assume, oh, it's a comedy band. And well, yeah, it is. But I mean, that means they have to know all the styles and they have to have all the skill to play those things, plus add the extra layer of humor on top of that.
Right.
So just because it's funny doesn't mean that there's not a lot of skill required.
Right. And what about you as a singer-songwriter? I mean, the parodies of the songs that people tend to know and, the videos and everything. But a lot of your songs are original songs.
Right. About half of my material is original. It's half parody, half original. And most of the originals at this point, I would say, are pastiches. They're sort of done in the style of another artist, although they are, in fact, original compositions.
Mm-hmm.
And those are a little bit harder to do than just a straight original because not only does it involve all the things that is involved in composing a new song, but you have to really study an artist's body of work and figure out what it is that makes them tick.
And what their audio signposts
are. Right,
so when you do that.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. We're speaking with Weird Al Yankovic. The book is called Weird Al, the book, strangely enough. And the latest album's called Alpocalypse. It came out in 2011 in the age of YouTube and things genuinely going viral very quickly. And, file sharing and all the rest of it. Has it changed your end of the business? Has it changed the way you approach parody?
The digital distribution, I think, is going to be helpful. I haven't taken full advantage of that. Because part of what I do is to try to be as timely and topical as possible with the parodies. And just because of the simple fact that the old model was you wait till you have 12 songs and then you put out an album and then it's still months before it actually winds up in the stores. And nowadays, with iTunes and portals like that, there's the possibility for me to get things out more quickly. Mm-hmm. I haven't taken full advantage of that yet, but I did one experiment with a parody of T.I.'s song called Whatever You Like, and my parody was also called Whatever You Like. But I got the idea for that, wrote it, produced it, and got it out on iTunes within a two-week period while T.I.'s song was still number one on the charts, which was great for me because I never am able to be that topical, and I would love to take advantage of that more in the future.
Let's hear some of that.
Hey, girl, our economy's in the toilet, but I'm still going to treat you right.
I said you can have whatever you like.
You like.
I said you can have whatever you like.
You like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gator tots, holds a gun, ice.
Ice.
And we can clip coupons all night, and baby, you can have whatever you like.
You like.
I said you can have whatever you like. Should know I'm really quite a sweet guy. When I buy you bathroom tissue, I always get the 2-ply. One of you can get it, my dear. I got my Costco membership card right here. Yeah, you like top ramen. Need top ramen. Got a cupboard full of them. I'll keep them coming. You want it, I gotta go get it. Just heat it, dump the flavor packet on it and eat it. Pork and beans and minute rice.
That is Whatever You Like, Weird Al's parody of the T.I. song also called Whatever You Like, which is, that's unusual for you to not have a parody title.
That kind of confusing. I just took the same title but gave it a different meaning.
Yeah. So that's an example of you sort of taking advantage of changing times. I mean, in the old days, if there was a hit song on the charts, You could record something real fast, send it to Dr. Demento. He'd put it on the show the Sunday night or whatever it was. For me listening, it was usually a Sunday night. And it would be timely. And then maybe that song would stay on the charts for a while, and your parody would therefore have a kind of a longer life as well.
Right.
Now the songs come and go so fast. I mean, do you find that you have to, like, you're running faster than ever just to stay in place?
It's more of a challenge. It's more of a disposable culture. And also I'm competing against, morning DJs and YouTube, where, like, there's 10,000 people doing song parodies. And, people get an idea and they can have it on almost immediately. So it makes it more of a challenge because it's hard for me to be as timely as that. And also, I will never, ever again be the only person to do a parody of any given hit pop song.
Right.
Ever. So that's going to be hard for me.
Now, let me ask you about the people who parody Weird Al, because there's a lot of them out there. And, sometimes they, as the comedians say, they work blue. the stuff. I mean, your material, although it may occasionally throw double entendres our way, has basically been family friendly.
Yes.
And there's a lot of stuff out there that gets pretty raunchy and yet is not just parody of your style, but sometimes, like, with your name associated.
Yeah, that is my biggest gripe with the whole peer-to-peer file sharing thing. I mean, it did kind of bring down the record industry, but on top of that, a lot of parodies are out there with my name misattributed to them. And a lot of those songs are vulgar. A lot of them are just very poorly done. And that does my reputation no favors. I've had more than one parent say, "I'm never letting my kid listen to Weird Al again. This is filthy. This is vulgar."
But what can you do about
it? Nothing. You cannot police the internet, really.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to, like, grit your teeth and live with it.
We're speaking with Weird Al Yankovic. The book is called Weird Al. The book, his latest album, is called Alpocalypse. I want to ask you a serious question. The night your parents died, accidental carbon monoxide poisoning, you had a gig and a meet and greet. Now, you canceled the meet and greet, but you went ahead and did the gig. And you had a really wonderful explanation that I would just like you to kind of share with the audience.
Well, I'm sort of a the show must go on kind of guy, and I kind of there are people in the seats. I'm in charge. There's a band, there's a crew, there's a lot of people depending on me, so I didn't want to let those people down. And on top of that, I thought it might be cathartic for me because over the years, so many people had told me that my music had helped them through times of grief, and I thought maybe my music could do the same thing for me. And I have to say, I it wouldn't have been my choice to go out on the road,
right.
At the time. But because I was already out there and I was sort of obligated to do it, I just thought that just going through the motions would be helpful. And it kind of was.
And the idea that fans would say, "Your music, you, Weird Al Yankovic, got me through some tough times with Eat It and Another One Rides the Bus and stuff like that," it seems on the surface so weird an idea. And yet, I mean, that's what art does.
Well, humor is healing. A lot of these songs are just kind of silly throw-offs, and you think, do they have any kind of real value? But I've got, boxes of letters from people telling me how much my music has meant to them and helped them really get through hard times in their lives, and that's very important to me.
So who's the fan base? I mean, when you're out on tour, who are you looking at out in the seats there?
I don't know why, but it's like 95% Korean women. I can't figure out. No, it really is one of the widest demographics that you'll see at a rock show. It's really everybody from toddlers to geriatrics, because a lot of people that were into me in the 80s are still following me, and now they're bringing their kids and sometimes their grandkids. So, and like you said, it's a fairly family-friendly show, and it appeals to a lot of different people on different levels. So it's quite a swath of humanity out there.
Have you done your Gangnam Style parody yet?
That's one of those things, like, when are you going to do this? Probably not going to do that, only because it's not falling in the right time period, because I'm working on the originals for the next album right now. And by the time I get around to working on the parodies, Gangnam Style and probably Gautier and probably Call Me Maybe, all these things that people are like, when are you going to do those songs?
Yeah.
Probably going to be a little dated by that time.
Yeah, and there, as you mentioned before, in this day and age of the internet, there are half a dozen, there's probably dozens of parodies of that song out there.
And that's the other thing, like, I don't know if I want to be the 10,000th person to do any given song parody.
Now, earlier this year, some of your fans were circulating an online petition that you, Weird Al, should play the Super Bowl halftime show. They went with Beyonce.
They, I'm sure.
Is that a mistake?
I'm sure it was a close call. Well, I think that we've lost our chance for an accordion solo at the Super Bowl halftime show. Unless Beyonce really pulls out some surprises. I don't know. You know, I never for a moment thought that I had a real chance of being playing the Super Bowl halftime show. But it was extremely flattering. And I got a lot of great support. And it was just kind of fun to play along with that.
Well, Weird Al, the book is called Weird Al, The Book, with Nathan Rabin. And the latest album, called Alpocalypse, features the accordion mashup called Polka Face.
Yes.
After all, the accordion and the polka with a very long and productive relationship. I'm sorry we don't have time to talk about things like your apparent obsession with Charles Nelson Reilly. But, Al, it has been a real pleasure having you with us on
Soundcheck. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can't read mine. Oh, he can't read a my polka face. She's got to love nobody. Pa 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 polka face, pa pa polka face. Ma 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 ma. Pa 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 polka face, pa pa polka face. Hey! Womanizer, woman, womanizer, you're a womanizer. Oh, womanizer, oh, you're a womanizer, baby. You.